again, Your Honor. May I please the court? The facts of this, my name is Ji Xianli, and I represent the petitioner. The facts of this case are not in dispute. Petitioner was threatened with an arrest when he intervened with birth control officials who came to his family house to remove furnishings. When petitioner's brother failed to report for sterilization as required.
Yeah, the subjects of the sterilization were the brother and the sister-in-law, not your client.
That's correct, Your Honor. But petitioner's intervention, in my opinion, constitutes a form of resistance to the coercive population control program.
Well, he was trying to stop what was going on with the house, not stop the forced sterilization.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the BIA, in its own word, acknowledged petitioner's action to be interfering with the population control officials' performance of their duties. But the BIA failed to specify what duties were those officials performing, and what the officials were doing by removing the furnishings from his family house was precisely enforcing the birth control policies in China.
Did he live in that house at the time?
I believe so, Your Honor. That's his family's house.
Well, family means different things in different cultures.
I
referred to my family's house as really my grandparents' house in Pennsylvania. I mean, but we don't know whether he lived in the house.
But I don't think that it's going to make a difference one way or the other. But in any event, what respondent interfering with was the enforcement of birth control officials, the enforcement of birth control policies in China. Therefore, the only logical conclusion that the court can draw is that he resisted the enforcement of the birth control policies in China. Therefore, he resisted the coercive population control policies in China. As a result, petitioner falls squarely under the statutory protection.
I guess the IJ says that the respondent testified that his brother, his wife, and two daughters lived in the same home with the entire family. That they claim they shared meals. So that seems to say he was living there.
Yeah, that's correct. Again, I think my point was
that... You don't think it makes a difference?
No. Even if it's, for example, it's never... For example, the officials were removing furnishings from his neighbor's house, and then he came forward and intervened. And what he did was interfering with the officials' performance of their duties, meaning the enforcement, namely the enforcement of the birth control policy. So therefore, by his action, he resisted.
But how does that fit within the statutory language?
The statute clearly indicates that a petitioner qualifies as a refugee if there's a category of other resistance to the coercive population control. If I may quote from my brief, in section 101(a), 42(b). It is provided that a person who has been forced to abort a pregnancy or to undergo involuntary sterilization, or who has been persecuted for failure to or refusal to undergo such a procedure, or for other resistance to a coercive population control program. So my argument to the court is that petitioner's action constitute other resistance to a coercive population control program. The other problem that I have with the BIA's decision leading to the instant petition is that the petitioner's due process rights were violated. It came as a total surprise to petitioner that the BIA would find questionable whether or not his claim is on a protected ground. The IJA denied petitioner's application for asylum based upon adverse credibility finding and nothing more. And sure enough, the petitioner appealed to the BIA just focusing on the IJ's analysis relating to his adverse credibility finding.
And the BIA then ruled in his favor.
That's correct, Your Honor. The BIA ruled in his favor, but nevertheless, the BIA denied his application for the reason that he did not submit enough sufficient corroborating evidence to show that the brother was being targeted for vasectomy.
Well, but then they retreated on that, too.
That's correct. Actually, it's the government itself asked for remand
right. To
the BIA to rule to reconsider its decision in light of the case law in this circuit.
Right, exactly so. And they said, and so we're going to do that.
Yeah, that's right. And then they denied petitioner's asylum on a totally unrelated basis. So therefore, petitioner was not put on notice to defend his case.
Did you make a notice to reopen or to attack this third?
No, Your Honor. I figure probably it would be futile to.
Well, have you exhausted your due process claim then? I mean, you're now telling us that this was a due process problem, and it seems to me you could have filed a motion to reopen and said, we have been denied due process because you sprung this on us out of nowhere.
I think, Your Honor, the due process issue can be raised for the first time with this court.
Could it have been raised there also? I mean, they were willing once to respond to the government's request for redetermination of the issue. And I'm just wondering why you couldn't have filed a motion to reopen at that level. And if you haven't, is that a failure to exhaust? It's not a loaded question. No,
Your Honor, because the jurisprudence in this circuit clearly says that the petitioner can raise for the first time due process violation with this court, and that's what we followed in this incident petition. So, in conclusion, Your Honor, petitioner's position that he established that his action falls under a protected ground, and secondly, that this case must be remanded for the BIA to give petitioner an opportunity to present his case. So therefore, if the panel does not have further questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Lou Bracco, and I'm an assistant U.S. attorney here in Honolulu. And this is my first foray into immigration law. Normally I do criminal cases, but some of these briefs were farmed out to our office, and I happen to have this one, and I didn't want to pass up the opportunity to appear before this court and do the argument. So first of all, I'd like to address a question that the court has. My recollection of the record is that Lee Bin Lin said that he did live in the house. He and his parents and I think one other sibling lived in either the front or the back of the house, and then his brother-in-law and his wife and their one or two children lived in the other part of the house. I forget who lived in the front and who lived in the back, but I think the record is clear that Lee Bin Lin did live in the house. I think another thing about this case, unless I'm completely misreading the law, is that this is a little different from the other cases that were before the court this morning, because here's the case where the BIA said, okay, we're going to accept everything that the asylum applicant says in the testimony before the immigration judge as true, and we say even accepting it as true, we find that he doesn't qualify as a refugee under the statute because for a number of reasons, but principally because there's no other resistance. They basically conclude that he hasn't met his burden, and it's his burden to show that he qualifies as a refugee, and he has to show persecution. So they say that he hasn't demonstrated other resistance, that this
was a single happenstance event, as
right.
You call it, with no follow-up.
Right, and it's clear there's a little bit of the testimony that I didn't cite in my brief that I was kind of reading last night, but at page 104, when the applicant's testifying before the immigration judge, and the population control people are
104?
At the premises. 104 of the administrative.
So I just went to reason with them and said these are properties of the whole family?
And the point that the testimony that I'd like to get out is he's basically saying he's protecting his parents and his own property, and he's saying it's to his brother's property. He says, hey, take it. Just wait for him to come back and take it. So he's really, that little snippet of testimony shows me that he's really protecting a property interest, and he's not expressing some political view on the population control policies of the government. He's saying, hey, it's my brother's property, you take it, but this is my family's property, you can't take this. But then when they persist, I guess, in taking some of the property that he persists, that he believes is his family property, that's when the altercation takes place.
Yeah, but then what happened after the confrontation? Well, they came away and they hit me. You cannot get involved. And so then they came by to arrest him. What happened after you were hit? Well, the officer came over to arrest me. Did they? No, I was not arrested. Why not? He ran away.
He said he slipped out of the back of the house when he found out that they were going to call for the police to come and arrest him. But the government's position is that he was, they called for the police because he was resisting the lawful duties of the population control people, not because he was expressing a political opinion. In other words, if the police here in the U.S. were clearing an area for some purpose and they said, hey, buddy, move your car, and the guy says, I'm not going to move my car, and they get in an altercation, that's not a political opinion.
It looks like he took off so that they couldn't arrest him. He stayed at his friend's house for 3 to 5 hours, half an hour, and then where did you go to live? I hid out everywhere. I went to places where there were no people. Are you saying you hid outside or indoors? Outdoors. Hide in places there was nobody. How long then did it take you to prepare to leave China? 2 to 3 days. So maybe I misread this, but it sounds to me like he got into a dust-up over the population control, the enforcement of population control procedures. They hit him. Then they sent somebody to arrest him, and he took off, and 2 to 3 days later, he was out of there.
Well, I think you have the sequence of events are right, but I think what you're reading into that is he took off because of something to do with the population control procedure.
Well, they were trying to arrest him.
Well, they were trying to arrest him, but it's not at all clear, and we submit it. There's nothing in the record that shows they were trying to arrest him for something to do with his political opinion as to population control. They were arresting.
This is, okay, so what we're doing here, what we did in Ding is sort of try to define force as what it means in the statute. What we're doing here is trying to define the word resistance as it appears in the statute. So he may have, in this case, he may have started out just trying to protect certain portions of the property and reason with them. But because he was asking them not to, he was interfering with their duties, then they hit him, then they threatened to arrest him, then they started looking at him, forcing him to hide out. So it's, the question really is, that I'm wrestling with, is at what point did just trying to protect your family's property turn into, in the eyes of the persecutor, because typically we look at the eyes of the persecutor, into resistance to the family population policy of China, to the point where those people were planning to, we'll hit him and then we're going to arrest him, and we know, you know, we can only imagine what that means.
Well, as I read the record, it appears that once the altercation broke out, he called the population control people, called for the security forces to come. And the security forces were en route, and then he basically takes off. So there's nothing in the record, as I see it, to say for sure whether he would have been arrested.
Well, if the security people were there, Now they're calling the proper security to arrest me.
Right. They were coming to arrest him, but the question is, what would they have arrested him for?
For interfering with the population control authorities.
Okay. And is that, if he interferes with the population control authorities in a way that has nothing to do with his political opinion, but is because their job is to...
Yeah, but they confiscate houses. That's part and parcel of the process, and he's trying to stop the implementation of that part of the process.
He was only trying to, in my view, Your Honor, he was trying to protect a property interest. He's basically just trying to say, look,
yeah, and that's why I think it's like a mixed motive. Sure he is, but he's trying to protect it from the policy that he's
no, Your Honor, that's
coming down
that,
on his whole family.
No, I don't think so, because he's saying in the record, he says, take my brother's property. Take it. But don't take my parents' property.
Yeah,
so
but,
he's not but the protecting.
Response, but the response to that is, it's very obvious from the narrative here, and we've seen this in other areas, that the population control authorities are somewhat indiscriminate in terms of the property they will take. And you can see why in a coercive regime they may very well wish to take the property of the parents, because the son may in fact be more protective of his parents' property even than of his own. And so I can see that it would be perhaps coercive, but not idiotic, for the population control people to take the parents' property. And he says, well, take my brother's property, but he's just trying to minimize the harm. He's clearly resisting what they're trying to do to enforce.
The other thing is that you keep talking about his political opinion. That's not in the statute. The statute says other resistance to the family control program. And so I think what we have to look at is whether he was resisting, for whatever reason he's resisting, the activities of the family control people.
Well, he was certainly resisting taking the property.
See, part of the enforcement procedure over there on occasion is, for a deterrent value, is when some member of a family does something wrong, the entire family gets it. And that sort of causes families to make sure that nobody inside the family does anything wrong, or we're all going to get clobbered. And that's what this is part and parcel of. The whole family goes down when somebody acts up and violates these
rules. Well, I understand that from the country profiles.
Right. So,
but it seems to me that this single act cannot rise to the level of other resistance just by a spontaneous, it's almost like a spontaneous event, like, you know, don't do this, because then once he goes away, I mean, there's...
So he should have allowed himself to get arrested.
Let me ask you this, if I can. Let's assume for the moment that he is resisting within the meaning of the statute when he tries to obstruct them from taking the property. What is the level of persecution, that is to say, the infliction of harm or threatened harm on him that's necessary for him to state a claim? That, say, you know, we're accustomed to all kinds of claims in which people are imprisoned for 5 months. We see all the time in our Sikh cases from India where, you know, they're beaten in the police station and various bad things. He was hit. The word hit is used several times. At one point, the word beat is used. But it doesn't appear that he was hit very badly, because he's being asked, well, did you go back to start cooking again? And he doesn't say, no, I was writhing in pain, I couldn't. He says, no, I didn't start cooking again because the people were going to come to arrest me, so I ran away.
I'm trying to figure out,
does this level of physical harm to him in the moment and the threat of what might happen to him in the future, is that enough to be persecution?
I would say not. I would agree from the record that it appears that he was slapped a couple of times, and that's what the
hit was. Used the word hit, didn't say slap.
Well, okay. But it doesn't appear that he was harmed permanently in any way, or that it was like a beating in a kind of a persistent beating. It was basically when they were taking the furniture and he was trying to interfere with their taking the furniture, he was struck so that he would move out of the way, basically, is the way.
Well, he didn't quite say that. He says it was hit. I mean, you're making...
I'm reading into the to the record.
I have the same concerns that Judge Fletcher does. You know, ordinarily, if this happened, and they arrested the guy and they kicked him out the next day or something like that, and then 5 months later he left the country with nothing intervening, we'd probably say, well, that wasn't persecution. It was a nasty event, but it wasn't persecution. The problem here is, you know, we don't know what would have happened to the guy if they arrested him because he got out of there rather than being arrested.
But from what happens, like, in the future, first of all, it's not his wife or him that's being sought to have the vasectomy. And ultimately what happens is...
Yeah, but the whole family thing is a different deal in China. I mean, they don't really make those distinctions the way we do.
Our position is that he doesn't have a legitimate fear of future persecution because...
He doesn't need to under the statute. Are you aware of any cases that discuss, or any legislative history or anything that discuss what Congress meant by resistance in this statute?
Other resistance?
No, only those.
Does it have to be like an organized program of resistance or a rally? What are they talking about when they're talking about?
No, the only cases I'm aware of, the ones I cited in the brief, and I didn't go into that here, but it has to be on account of his political, which in this case is the birth control policies. So I'm not, no, Your Honor.
It's pretty clear language, though, for other resistance to a coercive population control program. Here he's resisting the population control program.
Well, again, Your Honor, I wouldn't say he's resisting the population control program. I think he's resisting a specific visit where they're trying to, you know, take the furniture, and it's not part, there's no systematic pattern, there's no... nothing directed at him. The conduct is he just was home by happenstance. It's not like he had a plan to...
You're right, but it was enough to get arrested.
Well, it was enough so that security forces were summoned.
To arrest him.
Yes, that's what he says, to arrest him. He concludes that they were going to come to arrest, that they would have arrested him. I don't know that that's part of the record that they would have arrested
him. Well, if the incident is over... Isn't it a fair inference that they're coming to arrest him, not to break up the incident anymore?
Well, they were called because, as I understand it, he was interfering with taking of the property. So at the point where the security forces had come, I'm assuming if the property had been removed at that point, it's not clear from the record whether they would have arrested him or not. They may have said, you know, don't do this again, or they would have maybe been satisfied that the term to the family was taking the property. That's solely his speculation that he would have been arrested.
My question is resistance, does it have to be political resistance or, you know, in general resistance or actual resistance at the time that the policy is being carried out? And it's kind of, reading the plain language, it's any resistance. I'm just trying to figure out if there's anything we can look at to see to shed some more light on the contours.
Well, I'm unfortunately, Ron, I'm not aware of the case that would help you or the statute that would help.
All right. Thank you, counsel. I think you had, a couple minutes rebuttal.
Unless the panel has further questions.
I do, actually. Assuming that this is resistance within the meaning of the statute, why does what happened to him rise to the level of persecution? Because the statute requires persecution for resistance to family planning policy.
And if that's the concern the panel has, and then the case should be remanded again to the BIA and to... again, allow petitioner to have an opportunity to present evidence to show that what happened to him or what would happen to him rise either to the level of persecution or to be sufficient to establish a well-founded fear of persecution.
I see. So you're saying that because the BIA decided that this was not on account of a protected ground, it didn't reach the question of whether this was persecution.
That's correct.
And if we say it was resistance and the question is persecution, we need to ask the BIA?
Yes, sir, according to the Ventura.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I got it.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Lynn versus Gonzalez is submitted. We have previously submitted Casino versus Gonzalez. And that will end this session of the court for today. Thank you.
All rise. This court for this session stands adjourned. Now the law clerks are going to stay here to answer any questions you might have for about a half an hour, and maybe 20 minutes to a half an hour. The judges will then return to the courtroom and will be able to answer any questions you have then. So please feel free to stay.